When last we left our heroes, good friends Henry Bernstein and Brandon Bernstein started a podcast exploring comic books with explicitly Jewish content. Their conversation about the ever-loving blue-eyed thing was so exciting, so sprawling, no single episode could contain the audio awesomeness. Now, having already guided you through Ben Grimm's evolution from boy to man to rock mensch, we bring you the rousing conclusion of The Thing's Jewish journey, and wedding bells are ringing in the distance.
Welcome to Funny, They Don't Look Jewish, where Judaism appears in the panels. Our purpose is to find characters, stories, and issues of comics that explore explicitly Jewish content. I'm Henry Bernstein.
And I'm Brandon Bernstein.
No relation.
Moving on and sort of segueing us, really interesting thing I found out. So in an interview with Comic Book Resources, Dan Slott talked about the fact that not only did Thing end early, but it was originally supposed to go at least 25 issues.
Whoa.
And the entire series, right, two years of that comic,
yeah.
The entire series was building to number 25, where the eventful thing would happen, which was Ben Grimm would propose to Alicia Masters, right? Something that he makes happen in 2018 when he takes over Fantastic Four, Volume 6. In, I think it happens in the first issue of that series, right? So it's amazing that he's the one who first wanted to do that. He finally gets to do it 12 years later. It's pretty incredible. And I just wonder what would have happened if it had happened in 2006. Now, he admits that at the time, he asked editorial for permission to be able to do it, and they said, look, Ben proposing is totally fine to happen in The Thing. But if they're getting married, you're not writing that in the side story of The Thing. That is happening
in Fantastic Four.
It has to be a Fantastic Four event, which at the time was being written by J. Michael Straczynski. So the idea was that if it happens, J. Michael Straczynski is writing the wedding issue. And Dan was like, all right, I'm fine with that. So maybe it's for the better that it got canceled, we didn't get to see it, and now we got to see Dan's full vision of what the wedding looked like, which is really our next issue.
That's because a great we're segue. Diving it's in. Really, it's sort of auspicious that we had this idea, you know, I proposed this idea to you, and we, as we're talking about it, all of a sudden, The Thing is getting some mainstream media attention, and definitely in the Jewish world, some attention, because here he is on the covers of three different issues, wearing a talis, a kippah, and in one particular issue, breaking a glass. And all these people are coming out of the woodwork, the thing is Jewish, what other Jewish, and then they're linking articles to all the stuff you and I had already researched. But here we are. It's not just that The Thing is getting married, and then we should mention that part of this is a little bit of like a stunt, because in the Batman comics there was a big lead up to Batman and Catwoman getting married, and then they didn't. She left him at the altar, so to speak.
And in the X-Men comics,
Colossus
and Shadowcat were engaged, and they were going to have a big marriage, and that falls apart. Funny thing, in that same Comic Book Resources interview, Dan Slott reveals that he knew that the X-Men wedding wasn't going to happen. And so he was like, great, because my wedding, he knew that this wedding was coming, and he's like, mine's going to happen. Then he found out that DC was doing the Batman-Catwoman wedding, and he claims that he was like secretly praying and wishing and being
that
like, no, please don't actually happen, because I want to be the only real superhero wedding this year. And so when it doesn't happen, he was like, yes, I'm the only one of the three that actually pulls it off.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
This is where imagery, I think, is incredibly important. First they came out, Fantastic Four came out with a wedding special, written by, Dan Slott and a bunch of other creators,
including like Gail Simone.
Yeah, Gail Simone, and Fred Hembeck, who has been spoofing Marvel characters for years, and nothing happens in the issue. It's mostly a bachelor party and a bachelorette party.
Right. It's very clearly an excuse to be able to like make an extra buck at Marvel, have some other creators write some fun. Dan Slott says that he like wrote the script to the wedding issue, which includes a very brief scene of what Alicia and the women are doing at her bachelorette party. So he like sent that to Gail Simone and was like, imagine what the rest of the bachelorette party was. So like, fine, it's like little tiny things. The one pretty poignant story that happens in that wedding special is one where Thing goes to ask Alicia's father for his blessing over the wedding. And it's got beautiful art by Mike Allred.
Yeah.
And Alicia's father, shock, 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 is this villain called the Puppet Master, who basically his whole shtick is that he has this radioactive clay, and if he makes a clay sculpture of you, he can control you and make you do whatever he wants.
It's her stepfather.
It's her stepfather, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. And I want us to get back to that a little bit later. Yeah. So that's how Alicia was actually first introduced to the comics,
right?
Is that she was the daughter helping her stepdaughter, helping her stepfather. They defeat him. Alicia turns out to be an innocent. She ends up sort of hanging out with the team, falling in love with Ben, etc.
And we should mention she's blind.
Right, a blind woman, which is sort of the beauty of she knows Ben based on soul. She can obviously feel him, but she immediately thinks, like, what a gentle soul, what an incredible guy. So in this story, right, Ben goes to visit Puppet Master in prison to ask for his blessing and is shocked to find Puppet Master sort of say, you know, even though we fought, you're such an incredible guy, of course I give it to you. And then the brilliant reveal at the end is that Alicia was using the radioactive clay on her father to like force him to give the blessing. It's just like such a powerful story. And I was reading someone else was talking about how like seemingly it's a passive story for like, it's seemingly a story where Alicia has a more passive role, but she's actually more active in that than the Bachelorette story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice. It's nice. And you know, Alicia, she's sort of a lovable, a beloved Marvel character. That's definitely a supporting cast, you know, like, She's not in every issue. She's only really around when the Fantastic Four are in New York. There's a lot of will they, won't they, on again, off again stuff. Right. But you love her because she loves Ben for who he is, not because he's a horror, you know, rock monster or superhero.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. There were, for this, Marvel will never miss an opportunity to produce variant covers.
Yeah.
Right? Multiple covers because collectors... DC also does it.
Yeah.
Collectors will pick up multiple copies of an issue to be able to have different covers, or if it's done by different artists, you can get the one by your favorite artist, whatever it might be. So there's all told 9 variant covers, or 9 covers. The reality is there's a few more of that, but I'm not counting the ones that are like the same as this cover but in black and white, or the same as this one but whatever. Like,
right.
Basically there are 9 different Image covers, the original cover, and 8 variants. Okay, in four of the 9 covers, Ben is wearing a yarmulke and tallis. Right? We have the main cover by Esad Ribic, in which Ben is in a tallis and kippah, holding Alicia, and surrounded by this sort of flaming heart and doves flying.
Yeah.
Then we have the Mark Brooks variant, where Ben is in a tallis and kippah, holding Alicia in her wedding dress.
Yeah.
Then we have the Elizabeth Torque variant, with Ben in a tallis and kippah, kissing Alicia under the chuppah. So now we have a chuppah on a cover of a mainstream comic book. And finally, we have the Alex Ross variant, which really incredibly has very tiny at the top, Ben and Akipa kissing Alicia, and then sort of on either side of them, they're surrounded by all these superheroes going to battle and war.
Yeah, it's great.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And of course, the wedding special, he's breaking the glass. He's about to break the glass on the cover, which is great too.
Before we jump in that, I just want to be able to say, Fantastic Four, Volume 6, Number 5, comes out in December 2018. First of all, a friend of mine pointed this out, which is really amazing. My good friend Marcus pointed this out. It came out, I believe, the week of Christmas.
Yeah.
It's one of the only comics that shipped that week.
Yeah.
It's like, on the one hand, it's a light week, there's not that much, but like, the week of Christmas,
I was so happy.
One of the only comics published, has a major superhero wearing Jewish paraphernalia. It's incredible, right? So this issue, of course, is written by Dan Slott, drawn and inked by Aaron Cooter, colored by Marta Garcia and Eric Arciniega, and lettered by VC's Joe Caramagna, with 2 short stories that are interwoven into the main comic. One being a flashback with art by Mike and Laura Allred, and the other being a bachelor party with art by Adam Hughes. So credit to all those creators. Right, the stories, we don't really need to get into any of them, although in the flashback you do see Sue Storm, the Invisible Woman, playing a bit of a matchmaker, and I was thinking of that, and like obviously that touches on some Jewish ideas of matchmaking and what that means. But right, we get to the wedding. Not much happens. I did want to talk about a few things. Rabbi Lowenthal and all the Fantastic Four arrive at the airport in Benson, Arizona.
Yeah.
And Rabbi Lowenthal is there, traveling with everyone to officiate.
Because that's where Aunt Petunia lives.
Where, right? Aunt Petunia lives. Right. So I decided to do a little bit of research. I was like, I don't think there's many Jews in Benson. So I looked it up. The nearest synagogue is a 37-minute drive away south in a place, Temple Kol Hamid Bar in Sierra Vista, which, what a cool name. That's for a cool synagogue, name. Like Voice of the Desert.
In Arizona.
That's cool. An amazing name. I actually grew up, in the high desert of California at a place called Beit Knesset Bamidbar, which is
really?
Like Synagogue of the Desert. So,
I didn't know that was a near synagogue. That's cool.
It was also really, like, good to know that Midbar naming is there. But anyway, like, very clearly, Uncle Jake and Aunt Petunia are not living in, an engaged Jewish life, because they are living in a place where, like, I'm sure there are Jews in Benson, but if there's, the nearest synagogue is, 40 minutes away, like, there's not much of a Jewish
community. They're not in Miami. They didn't retire to Miami Beach.
No, they did not. Rabbi Lowenthal travels with everyone because, you know, as a rabbi, I've traveled for weddings. I've never traveled with the couple, so, like, that was a little strange. So we get to the wedding. There is a chuppah. Ben's wearing a tallis. And the most amazing moment for me was when Rabbi Lowenthal announces the two of them by their full names, right? When I think Alicia Masters and Ben Grimm, they do not sound Jewish to me. But wait, all of a sudden, Alicia Reese Masters and Benjamin Jacob Grimm. Suddenly their middle names just like, there's something very Jewish now about that. Jacob is obviously a very Jewish name, and Reese is not actually Alicia's middle name, but rather the name of her actual father, the one who died before the stepfather. Jacob Reese was her father, which I don't think they've ever canonically confirmed it. They've never shown it, but that's a very Jewish sounding name to me.
It
made me wonder, is Alicia Masters Jewish?
Maybe she's Jewish, right. And you know, I don't want to get too much into it, but we had seen some chatter online, some people saying some not nice things about Ben, you know, marrying a Gentile.
Right.
And, you know, we kind of pushed that conversation for another, because
that's unequivocally, I would like to say, like, I am in support of Ben getting married to anyone, regardless of their identity. Right. Like, yeah.
Samesies. Yeah. But maybe she's Jewish.
Maybe she's Jewish, right? Yeah. All right. So then, Dr. Doom interrupts this wedding with this like worldwide projection announcing Galactus has returned to eat all of Earth, and he's going to stop him, but nobody better enter Latveria. And the Fantastic Four is like, well, duty calls, we have to spring into action. Alicia gives them permission to go and says to Ben, like, remember what the rabbi said, which I just thought was such a funny, like, you can't even say remember what Rabbi Lowenthal said. It has to be that's what happens all the time. Yeah. Like, I lose my name. I just become the rabbi. Yeah. And that's what happened there. And then the moment that the first time I read it, I don't think I picked up on it. Absolutely incredible. You remember what Reed busts out then, right? To be able, like, at that moment. Reed takes out what he calls a chronal displacement device, which is basically a 4-minute time bubble that allows them to finish the wedding ceremony.
Yeah.
Before, while everyone else is frozen, before going off and saving the day. They've literalized the purpose of the chuppah, right? The chuppah is basically sacred time. And they found a way in a superhero comic to make it like science fiction-y and literalize. Like, what Reed did was he made the chuppah into a chuppah. Like, it's
insane. Do you think Slott knew that?
I do, and this is why.
Okay.
Right? Because then, at the end, Rabbi Lowenthal says, quote, it is said that at our weddings, the crash of a glass ends the hush of mythic time under a chuppah, allowing the world a new beginning to come rushing in. Never before has that been more true. Now, here's the really funny thing. I decided to do some research. Dan Slott took that line almost word from word from a book by Anita Diamond called The Jewish Wedding Now that explains what a chuppah does and what it is. So
He probably read it when he got... His rabbi probably gave it to him to read before his wedding.
I actually don't know if he's married. I actually looked into this. I never saw a ring on his finger. But Anita Diamond's write-up is reprinted in a My Jewish Learning article. So I think he probably just Googled it and saw. And this is the writing. This is from Anita Diamond's book. The crash of glass ends the hush of mythic time under the chuppah, and the world rushes in. Everyone exhales, claps and shouts Mazel Tov. The celebration begins. Very clearly that first sentence, like Dan just took it and adjusted it slightly. He clearly like Googled it and put it in there.
Shout out to Anita Diamond.
Right? Great Anita Diamond. Shout out. Amazing to have. And like, again, I just think that's incredible that he like took the chuppah and decided like, mythic time, I could do something with that.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. And then like, there's the unfortunate things, which are like, they do a typical I do moment under there, right? That doesn't happen at a Jewish wedding. There's no recitation of the usual Jewish wedding formula. There's no ketubah. There's no seven blessings. They give vows, which is not traditionally a Jewish thing. I sometimes see it at Jewish weddings, but like very clearly it's like a like typical American TV movie pop culture wedding, not at all a Jewish wedding other than the like accoutrements.
Right.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the breaking of the glass and the stuff, I remember as I was reading it, again, if you're going back to that feeling, so like, if I'd seen this as a kid, I wouldn't have appreciated it as much as I do now. As an adult, I have appreciation for the Jewish wedding, you know?
Yeah.
And you know when, like, you see a movie that isn't that great, but has a really good ending, and so you leave it feeling like, that was a good movie?
Yes.
That's how I felt about this issue, that, like, all I needed was that moment with the chuppah, the quote from, which I didn't know was from Anita Diamond, but that beautiful quote. I remember reading it, I'm like, wow, that's... Yes, that's what a chuppah is.
Right.
Way to go, dance lot.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
And that was like good enough for me. That with the cover.
Yes. Yes. I cannot overstate enough, and we've talked about that. Like, look, the goal of any comic book cover is to grab the attention of the reader. Right. Like the comic book cover sort of gives the mission statement of the issue.
Right.
There's a huge debate in comic books of like, should the cover always be something that actually happens in the issue, or should it just be something that entices you, or like what it should be? But the point is that like front and center. The number of comics I have, if not bought, at least flipped through just because of their cover is like a huge, huge number, right? The you get your eyes get drawn in and you look at it and you're like, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to look at it. And like, again, the fact that 4 out of 9 covers depict Ben in Jewish regalia is just, the heart swells. Yeah. And I feel a sense of pride that like, I was honestly surprised how much it meant to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dan Slott talked about this in the Word Balloon podcast. Word Balloon podcast. He talked about, you know, how he felt growing up Jewish and not having great representation and how he'd kill for, having a Jewish role model in superhero comics. We'll probably talk about this interview a little later when we do future episodes because he references some other characters. But he talks about the importance of the fact that, you know, seeing Jewish characters like Shadowcat and like The Thing meant so much to him. And that's what also encouraged him to then, when he created new characters, choose to not just create white male characters, but to actually create characters that would allow for representation of different people. Obviously, Dan Slott created in the Spider-Man comics Silk, who's sort of a female Spider-Man, her name's Cindy Moon, so I assume she's actually Korean, right? But like, you have this Korean woman, and he talks about all of these like fans that come up to him at conventions thanking him because they feel seen. And that's what this cover does for me. It makes me feel seen in a way that I'm not always. And like, look, we can argue that, you know, I am Jewish and I'm also a white, straight, cisgendered male. And so like, maybe I don't need to be seen so much because I get seen pretty regularly. But to have that part of my Jewish identity recognized was just, it was incredible.
Yeah, and especially in a medium where it hasn't really been recognized and a medium that you love so much that is a, you know, I would say, you know, like 3 things that I love, you know, comics, you know, Bob Dylan, Judaism, you know, yeah, and my wife and my child. But
those are the ones that go without saying. Yeah. You don't need to say them. Yeah.
But, you know, to have that kind of representation there, it's like, oh, thank you. You know, I just thank you for doing this. And like, that's a bold move for Marvel to put something like that, because does this mean anything to anyone else other than just, oh, my favorite character is getting married? And when I say this, I'm holding up the covers of the comic. I don't know. I haven't talked to Gentile comic book friends. I don't know if this is meaningful to them, but it certainly is to me.
Yeah, it's huge. And just like thinking, 1961, first issue of the Fantastic Four comes out. At that time, the comic industry was almost entirely made up of Jewish writers and artists creating characters, none of whom could explicitly be Jewish.
Right.
And in 2018, in what is legacy numbering, the 650th issue, right? So 649 issues in between, or 648 in between, you've got a cover with a character very proudly displaying their Jewish identity. And like, that was a long journey, but it's pretty incredible to see what it's like on the other side.
Yeah, we made it.
Yeah.
Mazel tov to Ben and Alicia.
Mazel tov, Ben and Alicia. And as we're saying, like, thank you to Dan Slott for pushing, like, the fact that of the three major issues that we covered, you wrote two of them, like, many thanks. And, we're obviously, like, in case you're listening, we're nitpicking some of these Jewish details, but, like, know that it comes with a sense of, like, utter gratitude for just making it be seen. And thank you to all those cover artists who drew, right? Like, I don't know if...
Brooks
and Esad Ribic and Elizabeth Tork and... Yeah. Right, I don't know if these people are Jewish or not, but, like, you represented my people on this, and I appreciate that. Before we finish out, let's just talk really quick about those holiday specials that really are like very tiny stories, but are interesting side pieces that reflect on Ben's Jewish identity, right? So the first one of them, Marvel Holiday Special 1994, specifically The Thing in Losing the Blues. This is written by Greg Wright, drawn by Mark Manley, colored by Greg Wright, and lettered by Brad Joyce. Greg Wright's a guy I'm not too familiar with. He seemed to have done a lot of early 90s work for Marvel, mostly writing things like Deathlok and Morbius the Living Vampire. So sort of like, in my mind and nostalgic memory, like the 90th of 90 things. So we get the story where basically Thing saves a group of young ice skaters at Rockefeller Center from a Christmas tree that's about to smash into them. And there's one little girl who's very salty and starts asking all these questions, but like, why do we even care about that tree? And why do we care about Christmas and complaining about all these things? And basically, Ben asks her what she got against Christmas, and she reveals that she's Jewish, right? And basically, the issue is like interspersing their conversation with Ben stopping various crimes. And there's this really powerful statement that Amy, the young girl, says. So I want to read it to you, Henry. Please. So she says, "I'm Jewish. They don't have a million Hanukkah specials on TV, or big sales, or tons of decorations. People think Hanukkah's like 8 days of Christmas, and it isn't. It wouldn't be so bad if Christmas stuff wasn't everywhere for 3 months, you know? I'm proud of my religion, but this stuff makes me feel like less or something."
I have literally said those words this past holiday season, probably to you, to my wife and some rant.
Right.
You know, when I just couldn't take another, person wishing me a Merry Christmas or whatever. But how did they tap into that so perfectly?
It's incredible, right? Like, it very much vocalizes the feeling. I have a lot of friends who, like, identify themselves as, like, I guess I'm a Christmas Grinch. Which is...
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
The idea of sort of, there's a lot of Jews for whom there's like this feeling of just like you get run down over time of sort of just constantly seeing this thing that's reminding you like, I'm not part of this. I'm not part of this society. I'm not getting to celebrate this. It really is just utterly capturing how I feel. And then Ben's response tends to be the one that I get from a lot of people, which is like, but it's not just about Christmas. It's all about peace or goodwill. And Amy again responds like, I don't see peace or goodwill. I just see people fighting over presents and yelling about gifts, scathing critique of commercialization.
I love
go,
that
Amy. Yeah, great kid. Totally going to grow up to be anti-capitalist, definitely going to be voting for Bernie.
Right.
Like, great kid. So then this like punk kid steals Amy's coat and she's freezing. Ben goes to offer his, but then this homeless person swoops in to give his coat instead. I think it's supposed to be sweet, but it's actually super creepy
because
this old man just comes in and is like, here, little girl, have my coat.
Yeah.
But she's charmed by it. And then Ben gives his coat to the homeless man. And Amy's charmed enough to be like, oh, there is goodwill somewhere. So she gives Ben some gelt, because apparently she just has it lying around as a Hanukkah present.
Which is awesome.
Which is, like, awesome to see. And Ben offers to get all three hot cocoa. So here's what's funny. I remember the first time I read this story, I could have sworn that Ben made some comment that made it seem like he'd never heard of Hanukkah, and that Amy had to explain what it was to him.
Yeah, the first time we looked at it.
Right, but reading it just now, like, it really just comes across as, like, she's talking about Hanukkah, and Ben's not saying, oh, I know, because I'm Jewish too, right? But, like, it goes back to what we started talking about, of, like, with Ben's broken faith in that early issue, that totally would explain that he's just like, oh, I haven't celebrated this for so long, I'm not going to say anything. And also, maybe he's just leaving room for Amy to express herself in her own position, right?
Right. Good listener.
Good listener. Great listener.
Which is surprising, but yeah. What's the next one?
All right, so next we get to Marvel Holiday Special 2004, a story called The True Meaning of... Always love an ellipsis.
Yeah.
So this is written by Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, drawn by Duncan Rouleau, inked by Aaron Saud, colored by Maury Hollowell, and lettered by Clem Robbins. We get this really cute story where basically Franklin Richards, the son of Mr. Fantastic and Invisible Woman, has to write a report for school on what his family does for all the holidays. So he gets Herbie, everyone's favorite robot that originally debuted because it was a replacement for the Human Torch in the original Fantastic Four cartoon, because network executives were worried that kids would set themselves on fire like the Human Torch. So he's replaced by a robot called Herbie. So Herbie's there. He's receiving Franklin's story, and basically Franklin goes and talks to different members of the family. The one that matters to us is he talks to Thing, right? And he goes to Ben, and Ben identifies and acknowledges that, like, he and Shadowcat are the only two openly Jewish superheroes there are, which is just, like, blatantly false. It's weird. Like, okay, maybe Moon Knight is not open about his identity, so I'll give them that. Maybe Magneto is evil at the time, but if he's good, like, Magneto's a clearly Jewish character. And finally, like, at this point in continuity, there is Sabra, the Israeli superhero, who's very, like, very clearly Jewish. So I don't know why they have that, but for whatever reason, Thing says he and Shadowcat are the only two. And he reveals that every Hanukkah, he goes down to Yancey Street to celebrate with Mr. Sheckerberg and the orphans, nice. Right? Which, maybe those orphans are those Yancey Street gang, you know, that we're talking about. I do really love the idea, you know, it's weird that it says he does it every year.
Yeah, when did that start?
When did that start? It clearly started when he went back. But I do love the idea that now he celebrates Hanukkah with Mr. Sheckerberg.
Yeah. And you can imagine maybe he goes for, like, Passover.
And other holidays. You know, right. The only reason we're talking about Hanukkah, Hanukkah overall, it's definitely a fun holiday, but it's not a major holiday in any way. And the only reason it really is known as well as it is because it happens to fall at the same time.
It's a winter solstice holiday.
It's a winter solstice holiday. It's around the same time as Christmas. Right. So people think it's a bigger deal than it is. It's not a huge deal. There's some, right, like in Chabad and other Jewish organizations, they definitely view Hanukkah as, like, significant and symbolic of, like, pretty big things. But overall, it's a minor holiday. Franklin very sweetly offers and says, I'm sure Mommy and Daddy would let you host the party at the Baxter Building. And Ben's like, yeah, your parents have actually offered that before, but I'm not interested. He likes that it's low-key. He likes getting to do it just him. And then he leaves saying, this is personal between me and God. You understand? Which just struck me as a strange sentence. Like, it felt more like Ben trying to shut off the conversation than, like, really believing.
Yeah.
Like, he's not particularly religious, but...
And also, like, that's a strange thing to say about Hanukkah. Like,
right.
You know.
Well, I think it's more about, like, what happens when he goes. Like, I think Ben just likes the time away from everyone else. And I think for Ben, he probably likes, in this case, having the Jewishness be something separate from everybody else.
Right.
He doesn't need it brought in with everyone.
Right.
Yeah. I do want to just bring up really quick, Franklin goes and talks to his father, Reed, about whether or not Reed believes in God. Reed sort of talks about believing in God just in, like, the miracle of life, and you see it everywhere. And it ends with Mr. Fantastic equating all religious holidays and saying, you know, Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, other holidays like Ramadan, they're all about the same thing. And I just found that, like, I get the message. It's a little cloying, and it's a frustratingly shallow read of these holidays, because the reality is you could agree or disagree, but there's actually depth to these holidays. Yeah. Right, there's depth to the meaning, and Hanukkah is not about the same thing as Christmas, right? And I'm not familiar enough with Kwanzaa and Ramadan, but I know that there's real deep cultural meaning, and to paint it all with this universalistic brush is, I understand the urge, but it's frustrating to read that. All right, our final issue is the Marvel Holiday Comic 2011, probably my favorite of the holiday stories, right? Called Chinese Food for Christmas. We immediately know this is going to be a Jewish story because, like, that is the Jewish tradition. You eat Chinese food on Christmas. This is written by Jamie S. Rich, drawn by Paco Diaz, colored by Jean-Francois Bulot, and lettered by Jeff Eckelberry. I don't know much about Jamie Rich. I know he's currently group editor for Batman Comics and unfamiliar with his work. This is FF era Ben. So this is from the era that Jonathan Hickman is writing both Fantastic Four, and then it transitions to this like side comic called FF. So this is a point in continuity where the Human Torch is dead. Spider-Man is on the team with them. And instead of the blue costumes, they're wearing these really fetching, amazing like white costumes that have like black accents. It looks really cool. It's probably like the best alternate Fantastic Four costumes they've ever made. So we've got this Ben, he's on the phone with Kitty Pryde, and Shadowcat, Kitty Pryde, is basically teasing him about the fact he has a pumpkin spice eggnog, and also the fact that, like, Sasquatch and Moon Knight will eat all of the sesame chicken if he doesn't hurry up and get to the party. So you're seeing, like, oh, Jewish superheroes, they're going to be eating Chinese food on Christmas. This is amazing. Thing makes up, you know, it's basically is like, oh, you don't want me to drink pumpkin spice eggnog? Should I drink Manischewitz instead? Which, like, just again, like, that's one of those Jewish stereotypical throwaway lines. So Ben starts hunting down this monster that keeps stealing Christmas decorations. And he does have, this is, like, a very silly line, but I thought, like, it may be Christmas time for the Gentiles, but for you, it's clobbering time. Turns out this monster is actually stealing everything for orphan children who were supposed to have Christmas provided for them by a charity that backed out at the last moment and left them with no Christmas food. And it's like the most tragic thing ever, right? It's terrible. So Ben, being the mensch that he is, invites them all to go to Jewish Christmas. The weird thing is he asks them if they've heard of Hanukkah. They have. And not only have they heard of it, they're like, yeah, isn't it over? Right? And he's like, yeah, but this is what we do for Christmas. Why wouldn't he just say, like, do you know what Jews do on Christmas? Like, why bring up Hanukkah at all? There's no reason other than, I guess, like, they felt like they have to say it because it's a holiday special. It was really strange.
So that they could have the picture of, like, the menorah on the last page.
Right. And, well, but that's what's so fr- So the final page is all these Jewish superheroes together. So let's talk about what I hate about it before we talk about what I love about it. In the corner is Wiccan, real name Billy Kaplan, one of the Young Avengers, and he's using his powers to light a Hanukkah. He's lighting four of them. Here's what's wrong. He hasn't lit the central Shamash candle, the central helpful candle, and the four he's lighting, like, he's lighting them in the wrong order. I don't know what he's doing. He's
lighting two of them at the same time.
Yeah, it's, like, very strange. And also, the story established that Hanukkah is over. Why is he lighting it? Like, it's clearly for visual representation, but it bothered me. Like, if you were going to do that, don't have a line about how Hanukkah's over.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Just, like,
why do you need
why
that?
Draw attention to that?
Yeah. So who's in this picture?
But we have this amazing picture with Moon Knight, also known as Mark Spector.
We're going from left to right.
Yep. Okay. We've got Songbird, Melissa Gold, who's one of the Thunderbolts. Shadowcat, Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, she is, and we'll talk about her another time, but she is one of the in-canon Jewish Iwara Star of David long ago. She's
right, like from the 80s on, like always Jewish.
Yeah.
The Thing himself, Ben Grimm. We have the Sasquatch, Walter Lenkowski, who's a part of Alpha Flight.
He's like a furry Hulk.
Yeah, he's like a nice furry Hulk that's based on Canadian magic.
Right.
And then Wiccan, once again from the Young Avengers, Billy Kaplan. So it's really great to see all of them. It's sort of this definitive image of, as of 2011, these are the Jewish superheroes of the Marvel Universe. The thought of them getting together and celebrating Christmas by eating Chinese food is just, like, amazing. I absolutely love every bit of it. Again, it's my favorite of these stories because I get together with, like, every year at Christmas time, I figure out what group of Jewish friends I'm going to get together with and go eat Chinese food with, right? It's just, like, it's the thing to do.
Now, two questions for you. One is silly and one is serious.
Okay.
The silly question, do you think they're eating kosher Chinese food or they're just at a regular Chinese restaurant?
Definitely not kosher. Okay. Definitely just like, they're just eating at a regular restaurant.
There's like some mushu pork there for sure.
Oh, I don't know. It's not a, right? Like, they might have avoided treif, right? Like, but like, they for sure are not eating. Yeah.
Okay, so here's my question is, if this is what we're going to end on, is this scene explicitly Jewish for our original definition?
Right. I would say it's explicitly Jewish. And the reason being, look, lighting the Hanukkah, first of all, it is celebrating a Jewish holiday, right? Even if it is a little stereotypical. But for me, it's more of like, we described it as people like living a Jewish experience.
Yeah.
And Judaism's not always about the religion. Sometimes it's about the cultural aspect. And a very key part of the Jewish American identity is Chinese food on Christmas. Now, granted, these days, more people beyond Jews are eating Chinese food on Christmas, I think. Like, the secret's out. Everyone knows about it. Restaurants are open on Christmas, and so people tend to go there. But, like, again, if we're talking about lived Jewish experience and we're talking about representation, I saw myself in these superheroes when I saw them gathering to eat Chinese food.
It'll be interesting to see as we go along, you know, maybe as we get further along, kind of in the vein of what one of our favorite podcasts, Journey into Misery, does with ranking heroes, like maybe how Thing ranks in terms of Jewishness among right. other characters that we see as we go forward. Right now, to me, he's number one. I'm thinking ahead. I can think of some others that could give him a run for his money, but those are, you know, three really great examples of explicitly Jewish content in comics.
Right. It's incredible. 20th
century.
We've seen him say Jewish rituals at, right, what he thought was someone's death. We've seen a wedding. We've seen a bar mitzvah. Right. And now we've seen him celebrating Hanukkah and specifically in like a very act, like not in just the holiday, but eating the Chinese food. Right. Like,
yeah.
Like you're right. It's going to be very hard to sort of top this when it comes to explicit Jewish content lived out on the page.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in future weeks, like we'll be looking at other characters. We might look at specific storylines. We might look at ours. We're not fully sure. We're open to this evolving. For right now, our focus is going to be characters and looking at a few characters at a time. Obviously, the Thing is sort of the richest of in terms of stories, and so I imagine this might be a longer episode than others. Who knows?
Thank you, and that's going to do it for this week of Funny They Don't Look Jewish. I'm Henry Bernstein.
I'm Brandon Bernstein.
No relation.
You can follow us on Twitter at Jewish Comics Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/Jewish Comics Pod, or you can email us at jewishcomicspodcast@gmail.com.